Okay, so we're just beginning our series of talks, and I'm very happy to be able to share with all of you excerpts from a text that I absolutely adore and is one of my favorite ones. So it's The Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, the title's also translated as Engaging in the Bodhisattva's Way. It's written by Shantideva, an 8th century Indian sage. And the reason I like this text so much is because Shantideva speaks directly to us and in a very no-nonsense way. And so there's no way that our self-centered thought and our ignorance and self-preoccupation can get out of it. You know, we can't make excuses to Shantideva. Because he hits every one of our rationalizations. So he really makes us practice. And that's why I love this text so much. It's also a text that is a favorite of His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. And he often teaches it. So I'm going to take some verses from a few chapters and then hope that you will be inspired to read the rest of the book and to receive teachings on it, because receiving teachings verse by verse is really important, and it really unpacks the meaning of the text much more than just reading the text itself. Okay, so this text, you know, as the title says, is talking about how bodhisattvas live. And Shantideva starts with talking about the benefits of bodhicitta. So there's 10 chapters in the text. I'll just outline them for you so you get an idea of where he's going. So first chapter is on the benefits of bodhicitta. The second is a chapter on confession of negativities. The third is the full acceptance of bodhicitta, taking the bodhisattva vow. The fourth is conscientiousness. The fifth is guarding alertness. Sixth is fortitude, and that chapter saved me, or should I say is saving me, because it's all about how to work with our anger. And I went through a period in my life where I was working at a Dharma center, getting furious every day at the people I was working with, and going back to my room every night and reading this chapter and trying to calm down. And so it's a very, very helpful chapter. And my book, Working with Anger, is taken from this. The seventh chapter is on joyous effort. The eighth chapter is on meditation. And it's in that chapter that he talks about equalizing and exchanging self with others, which I'll get into a little bit later. The ninth chapter is wisdom, specifically the wisdom realizing the ultimate nature, the emptiness of inherent existence of all persons and phenomena. And then the 10th is a chapter on dedicating the mirror. Okay, so to start with, talking about the benefits of bodhicitta. So first of all, we have to know what bodhicitta is. It's the aspiration to become a fully awakened Buddha in order to have the compassion, wisdom, skillful means, and power to best be able to benefit other sentient beings. Okay? So it's a very strong aspiration that really directs the actions we do and the whole meaning and purpose of our life. So Shantideva starts out in chapter 1, saying, "Freedoms and fortune are very hard to find, and since they accomplish what is meaningful for human beings, if I do not take advantage of them now, how will such a perfect opportunity come about again?" So this verse, when they talk about freedoms and fortunes, is talking about the advantages of our precious human life, that we are healthy, that we have the material wherewithal to practice the Dharma. We live in a time when the Buddha has taught, when the lineage of the teachings still exist, when we can meet teachers, hear the teachings, practice them, have the support of the Sangha members and the lay community. So we have a very special life this time. And rather than just use it to, have a good time and so on, rack up Facebook, what do you call them? Facebook what? Entries, yeah? So rather than do that and collect a bunch of photos and think that that's the meaning of our life, so that when we're old we can reminisce about, oh, when I was younger I went here and then I did that. Rather than do that, to really do something meaningful in our life that will last a long time, yeah, and influence other living beings and carry on with us into our future rebirths. So Shantideva then continues, just as a flash of lightning on a dark cloudy night for an instant brilliantly illuminates all. Likewise, in this world, through the might of the Buddha, a holy thought rarely and briefly appears. Now, if you're anything like me, before I met the Dharma, I thought I was a pretty good person. Yeah, okay, I have my problems, but I was a pretty good person. Very virtuous mind, certainly more virtuous than the politicians and the business people. But when I met the Dharma and the Buddha pointed out that ignorance, clinging attachment, and anger, not to mention jealousy and arrogance, were non-virtuous, I began looking at my mind, and suddenly I realized, I'm really not as great as I thought I was, and that I was in the process, because of these mental afflictions, of creating a lot of negativity. And so that's why he says here, for ordinary beings in samsara, in this cyclic existence, a virtuous thought really rarely appears. A thought that is, instead of, I want this, a thought that of generosity towards others, instead of anger and, rebelliousness and belligerence and bad-mouthing people, a thought of kindness, of forgiveness, these kinds of thoughts, when we look around the world today, not only in our own mind, but, what we read about in the newspapers and so on, we can see that virtuous thoughts, are indeed rare, and that most of the time our mind is focused on I want what I want when I want it. Yeah, and I'm going to get what I want as soon as possible, and the world should give it to me. Of course, we're much too polite to say that out loud, but that's how we all operate. So look at your own mind. You don't have to believe me. Look at your own mind and see if your mind works like that. My mind does. Okay. He continues, hence, virtue is perpetually feeble, the great strength of negativity being extremely intense. And except for bodhicitta, by what other virtue will it be overcome? So when we look, when we are attached to something, we are intent on getting it. I want this possession. I want this position in my workplace. I want the promotion. I want to have a family. I am attached to my parents, my spouse, my kids, my friends. I want to surround myself by everything that's nice. I always want to hear nice, pleasing, ego-bolstering words. Yeah, I want to have a good reputation. So, our life really centers around that kind of thing. Yeah, doesn't it? And, to the contrary, anything that interferes with what with us getting what we want when we want it, we get upset. We get angry. Yeah, when people have different ideas than we do. Oh, their ideas are wrong. My ideas are right. Why don't people listen to me? I'm always neglected. And on and on and on. Okay? So, except for the bodhicitta mind that is dedicating our life to benefiting others, and in order to do that most effectively, aspiring to attain full awakening, aside from that mind, what is really going to change this whole thing? Okay? What is going to enable us to reach our fullest potential as human beings? Okay, so he says, all the Buddhas who have contemplated for many eons have seen the bodhicitta to be beneficial, for by it the limitless masses of beings will quickly attain the supreme state of bliss. So how come all these masses of sentient beings will attain full awakening? Because when we generate bodhicitta, when we attain Buddhahood, then we develop the skill to really be able to lead them on the path most effectively. And that is a way of showing kindness, a way of being generous to others that far exceeds the generosity of giving people food and clothing and such. You know, helping people in this life is marvelous and we should definitely do it. But being able to lead them out of the cycle of rebirth is even more marvelous. And it's the bodhicitta that enables us to do that. Okay, then, he says, the bodhicitta is like the supreme gold-making elixir, for it transforms the unclean body we have taken into the priceless jewel of a Buddha form. Therefore, firmly seize this bodhicitta, this awakening mind. Okay? So what he's saying here is that when we generate bodhicitta, it will lead us to attain full Buddhahood. At Buddhahood, instead of having a flesh and blood body like this, which gets old and sick and dies and is painful and, you know, so on, we will attain the physical form of an enlightened being. So the physical form of an enlightened being, some are like bodies of light where they appear to teach other bodhisattvas, and some are bodies where a Buddha manifests in our world and appears looking like us, but is actually a Buddha. And through the actions that they do, teaching and leading others, then they can really benefit sentient beings. So it's the bodhicitta that is the motivation for full awakening that gives us this opportunity to transform this kind of body into a physical form that can be of greatest benefit to others. Okay. Shantideva continues, all other virtues are like the plantain tree, for after bearing fruit they simply perish. But the perennial tree of bodhicitta unceasingly bears fruit and thereby flourishes without end. So the plantain tree is like a plantain is like a, kind of like a banana, okay? And apparently, it grows in India, and after it bears its fruit, the tree dies or the fruit decays or whatever, okay? So that is like when we create karma with the motivation, and karma just means our actions. So when we act with the motivation of this life's happiness, or even for the purpose of next life's happiness, or even for the purpose of liberation for ourselves, not thinking about others, that virtue will ripen in those kind of results. And then the effect of that virtue finishes. Yeah. Whereby when we act motivated by the bodhicitta, the effect of that virtue will not expire until all beings are awakened. Yeah. So it really, you know, by having the bodhicitta motivation, then it really is very, very effective for creating virtue, for purifying the mind, and so on. Then, in brief, the awakening mind should be understood to be of two types: the mind that aspires to awaken and the mind that engages in doing so. So there's two types of bodhicitta. There's the aspiring bodhicitta, where we aspire to attain fully awakened, but we're not quite ready to go on the path yet. Then there's the engaging bodhicitta, where we actually adopt the bodhisattva practices, the bodhisattva conduct, and that is what takes us to full awakening. So Shantideva explains the difference between the two. As is understood by the distinction between aspiring to go and actually going, so the wise understand in turn the distinction between these two. Yeah. So I could aspire to go to Delhi. Yeah. And that's great. Right now I'm sitting in Sydney and I can aspire for Delhi and it's wonderful and I imagine being in Delhi, but I'm not doing anything about it. Okay, still having that imagination, that intention is good because it will eventually, when I nourish that intention, lead me to actually go out and get the ticket to fly to Delhi, yeah, pack my bag, go to the airport, get on the plane and go. Okay, so that process of actually going is the engaging bodhicitta, where we adopt the bodhisattva practices. Okay. Although great fruits occur in cyclic existence from the mind that aspires to awaken, an uninterrupted flow of merit does not ensue as it does with the engaging mind. Okay, so the mind that aspires to awaken will bring great fruits in while we're still in cyclic existence, but it's the engaging mind that practices the six perfections, which can be broken down into 10 perfections. It's that mind that actually creates this uninterrupted flow of merit that results in full awakening. And for those who have perfectly seized this bodhicitta with the thought never to turn away from totally liberating the infinite forms of life. Okay, so that's the kind of attitude Shantideva is encouraging us to have, you know, to really dedicate our minds to being of highest benefit and for that purpose to attaining full awakening and never giving it up. Okay, so it's not like, I'm going to help you as long as I feel like it, and then after that I'm going on vacation and I'm going to take care of myself. It's really saying this is the purpose of my life, this is what I'm dedicated to do. I may hit bumps in my life, in fact I will hit bumps in my life, but I'm still going in this direction no matter what the bumps are. So it gives us a lot of inner strength and a lot of determination. From that time hence, even while asleep or unconcerned, a force of merit equal to the sky will perpetually ensue. Okay, so then after we generate the aspiring bodhicitta, and then when we take the bodhisattva vow and engage in the 6 and 10 perfections, after that, no matter what we're doing, if we maintain that bodhicitta motivation, we're continually creating merit. Yeah, and so it says, even while asleep or unconcerned, that intention is still there in our mind. And You know, it may not be manifest in our mind, but it's there, underlying everything. And so there's a continual creation of merit, which is very good, because we need a lot of merit in order to become fully awakened beings. And then Shantideva says, do even fathers and mothers have such a benevolent intention as this? Do the gods and sages, does even Brahma have it? So we usually think of our parents as being very kind, but do they have the motivation to attain full awakening for the benefit of all beings? Can our parents lead us to full awakening? They're kind to us in this life, but they're unable to nourish that spiritual intention in the long term. If those beings have never before even dreamt of such an attitude for their own sake, how could it ever arise for the sake of others? So if our parents and teachers have never even dreamt of attaining full awakening for themselves, certainly they're not going to aspire for that for us. So we appreciate the kindness of sentient beings in this life, but we realize that it's really only the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha that is our real refuge, that will enable us to fulfill our great potential and attain Buddhahood. This intention to benefit all beings, which does not arise in others, even for their own sake, is an extraordinary jewel of the mind, and its birth is an unprecedented wonder. And so when you look around the world and you know what all these sentient beings are doing at this very moment, you know, how many of them have the intention even to purify their own mind and act ethically, yeah, let alone work for the benefit of others, let alone fulfill their spiritual potential by attaining Buddhahood. So the bodhicitta is something very precious and very rare. And so that's why Shantideva is saying we should definitely take advantage of our present precious human life to do the practices to generate bodhicitta, and then to do the bodhisattva practices and attain full awakening.